Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. This is Fanny Crawford.
And this is Stosh Ziolkowski.
Woo! We're happy to be here. Today is Monday, March 21st.
Yay!
And we took a little break, but we're back now. Our theme today is luck. And I feel lucky to be back on air. How about you, Stosh?
I feel the same. And that's good because today's a great day. It's spring.
It is.
People walking around in shorts and t-shirts here. And
the nerve of them.
I'm glad you got something on. You never know. I don't know what Martinsburg like when it gets real hot. You know, being a new resident in West Virginia, I don't know how people over here, you know, some places say it gets warm and all of a sudden they don't have as many things on as they used to have.
as many things. Okay.
Well, I wanted to be delicate anyway, you know. I didn't want to say something vulgar.
Tell us about the Speak Story Telling series without being vulgar.
Okay, so listen, you'll have to listen carefully to this because Speak is starting a new thing. We're going to have, let me see, how should I say this? We are going to have events live again. And also, possibly live and being broadcast on Zoom. So, but I have to do is find the correct. I've got the information in my phone here. Okay, here we go. Sheila Arnold. Okay.
Tuesday, yeah.
April 12th, Bird Auditorium, the Bird Center for History and Education, is the place that we will be holding the, you know, in-person performance.
And that's on campus at Shepherd University.
Yes. And that will be at 7:30 on Tuesday, April 12th. Now, on Wednesday, April 13th, at the Bird Auditorium, which is the Irma Aura Bird Auditorium. It's, if you stand in front of the first place on April 12th, and you just look straight down the street, you'll see the Irma Aura Bird Auditorium, all right? So these two concerts, these two concerts will be in person. However, the 12th, the Tuesday concert, will be available online. So people can see that with Zoom as well as, you know. So if you go to the website, speakstoryseries.com, and you get the information in detail there, there will also be a place where you can click and get the link. You can sign up. If you're a season pass holder, the link will be sent to you. So anyway, this is going to be interesting because those will be two separate, distinctly different concerts by the same person. All right, one on Tuesday, then one on Wednesday, and they will be two different stories. two different.
You know folks. What she's telling?
I don't have that in front of me. I wish I did.
I do.
Oh, well, wait a minute.
Might take a minute.
Terry. A voice from the other room.
Yes, Terry's going to find it for me. Terry, okay. This came from her yoga session.
Do you want to tell us anything about the rest of the spring, at least?
Here's the problem. We have a proposal to be in a regular space, but that hasn't come true yet. And so I'm sure Adam had to do some
fast footwork,
and hopefully he didn't have to rent those two places. And I'm guessing possibly he's worked that out through the university. Anyway, I can give you,
Hi, Terry. Okay. Want to be on the radio?
Yeah. Say hi.
Are you on now?
Yeah, we're on. So, yeah.
You're live.
Yes. Okay. So,
you're part of the crew.
I'm going to mention the two programs. On Tuesday, the program will be Oney Judge, O-N-E-Y, Judge, 18th century free woman, past personal maid servant to Martha Washington.
Indeed.
Okay. I think.
Yep. She did Oney Judge at Stories in the Round.
Who did?
Sheila.
Oh, she did.
Yeah.
That must have been before me.
Well, it was a while ago.
Yeah, okay. And then on Wednesday, the program on Wednesday will be Running into Dunbar, Paul Laurence Dunbar.
Oh, good. Okay.
Late 19th century poet, short story author, anything. Okay, so. I don't think I should go into other months because we don't have details yet on where they will be.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So, there you go. So
our theme today is luck.
Luck.
Would you like to go first?
Well,
tell your story.
I will. Okay. Oh, by the way, if you get a chance, I'm not sure, you're not a big television watcher as far as I know. I don't think you watch a lot of television. However, and I don't know if you were interested in it or not, but the movie about Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz.
Yeah, we watched it.
You did? We did too. I was just going to suggest it to you. Did you like it?
I had mixed feelings about it, but I thought it was well done.
They did a good job. I really like Nicole Kidman. I've seen a lot of her movies, and I've liked her ever since the first time I saw her. When she and Tom Cruise were married and were a young couple, and they did a movie together about coming to America, it was pretty good. Anyway, I think she's a fine actress, and Javier Bardem was excellent, I thought, as Ricky, as Desi Arnaz. So anyway, it was good to see some of the things that they referenced in there, or actually showed some of a little bit of scenes that I could remember, because I don't think I ever missed I Love Lucy. I was a kid, but I just loved that show, and we didn't have a television at first, but I could go around the corner to Bobby's house and watch it.
I watched it every day at lunchtime.
That was a treat.
But I think they were reruns at that point.
I was going to say they had to be reruns because those television shows were never done at lunchtime.
Right. Well, this was like 1957, 58, 60s. Okay, yeah, but tell me, I want to hear your story.
Okay, so this is a story. And unfortunately, I really like the story, but the unfortunate part is there are three different girls in the story, and one, I guess he's a male, a leprechaun. Yeah. Would be a thing.
I've never heard of a female leprechaun.
I don't, you know, that's why I said, I guess he's a male, because I don't know if there are female leprechauns. That's something to research. I got a thing from Ireland, and Terry and I were talking about, Terry was talking about, do you want to take a trip to Ireland? I would love to. However, I should look in that book, and then maybe I can contact somebody and ask about the female leprechauns. That would be fun. You and John and the radio audience will have to put up with me suggesting the girls' voices. And I'm not going to try to have three different voices. I'm just going to tell the story. Hopefully, I'll do it well enough that you will understand the girls are different. Okay, so it begins with three young girls, just around the edge of teenage years, maybe like 1 year away from that. So the girls meet at the town square and they start this adventure. One of the girls is carrying a blanket and the others have flashlights. We need to go to the fork in the path near the old castle. And Bridget says, why go there? Colleen said, is that where he lives? The first girl, Maureen, says, I heard my Uncle Thomas talking to his friends, and he said that tonight is the perfect time to catch a leprechaun because there's a full moon, and leprechauns like to admire their gold in the moonlight. Bridget says, ask a question. Do they really carry their gold in little pots? Colleen said, of course they do. They don't have pockets. And Bridget comes back with a question. How can we catch a leprechaun? Maureen says, how do you know they don't have pockets? Colleen, you told me. Oh, Maureen says, that's right. I forgot. How can we catch a leprechaun? Well, Colleen has the answer. We throw a blanket over his head and say, free or not, and now you're told, we have you caught, so give us your gold. How do you know that's going to work? And Colleen says, you told me. Oh, yeah, that's right. Maureen doesn't have a very good memory. Bridget, but what if he runs? We have to hold onto his arms. How do you know that? And Colleen says, I think that's common sense. These three sound like living together a long time as friends. So Maureen says, well, my Uncle Thomas says that the leprechaun has to give you his pot of gold or three wishes. And they always try to get you to accept the wishes instead of the gold. Bridget says, okay, so we will catch the leprechaun and get three wishes. That's right. And we have to be careful because they always try to trick you into wasting the wishes. What will we wish for? Gold, lots of gold. And Maureen says, we'll decide on our wishes after we catch the leprechaun, which they agree, that makes sense. There's the fork in the road. Shh. I hear someone coming. Quick, Maureen says, get the blanket ready and hide. So they just go behind a couple of trees and they're watching, and down the path comes Patrick Aloysius, Michael Sean O'Casey himself. And he's singing a happy song. 'Tis a lovely full moon. It makes me heart so bold. It makes me sing and croon about me pot of gold. 70 pieces and more shine in yellow moonlight. I'll spread them on the forest floor and sing and dance at the sight. Well, the girls creep up behind Patrick Aloysius, Michael Sean O'Casey himself, and throw the blanket over his head. Bridget and Colleen grab, hold his arms. He struggles, but the girls all say, free or not, and now you're told, we have you caught, so give us your gold. Well, oh, my, says the leprechaun. Yes, you have me fair and square. Well, me darlings, remove this blanket, please, and make your wishes, and I will grant them sure. And Maureen says, don't listen to him. Just hold on tight. How do you like my Irish accent for a leprechaun? Sounds a little bit between North Korean and Afghanistanese, I guess. Back to the girls. Bridget says, let's wish for gold. Colleen, yes, let's wish for gold. Maureen says, just wait. I'll take the blanket off, but you two hold him tight. Uh-oh. And okay, see, the leprechaun says, well, lassies, if it's gold you want, it's gold you should wish for. And we'll see what Patrick Aloysius, Michael, Sean, O'Casey himself can do for you. Maureen says, if we wish for gold, will you give it to us right away? And Bridget says, do we get the pot that it's in? If it's heavy, can you deliver it to our house? Such great, these girls have no clue about how tricky leprechauns are. But I love their boldness that say, if it's heavy, can you deliver it to our house? I bet the leprechaun will have lots to say about that. Well, now, me fair colleagues, I can't answer all that at once. I'm not quite sure how to answer you. I'm very tired. It's not easy being a leprechaun, even for Patrick Aloysius, Michael, Sean, O'Casey himself. It's not an easy job to grant wishes. Everyone wants something. My wife is always asking for things, and the little ones never run out of ideas for things they want. And of course, there's Grandma. She can't remember what she wishes, and then she blames me for giving her the wrong thing. It's a hard life I lead. People always trying to catch me, wanting me gold. I had to work hard as a lad to get the gold, and it's a terrible strain, always trying to protect it. I'm always tired, and I have to be always on my guard. And some of the ways people try to catch me, ropes and traps and blankets and such. And the bruises, oh, you two are holding me a bit tight, you know. My clothes are a mess and I can't go for a walk of an evening without the worry that I'll be kidnapped. And there's me dancing. Everyone knows a leprechaun has the need to dance. I'm out here to dance in the moonlight. What happens? I'm detained by you three. And Bridget says all of a sudden to Colleen, I wish you would be quiet. The leprechaun stops talking. Maureen says, go on, what were you saying about your dancing and us? And Bridget says, oh no, I wish he would stop talking. And Maureen says, I wish you hadn't done that. And you know what that means. Oh, now you made me make a wish. Don't say anything else, says Maureen. Okay, I will. Colleen, don't speak. We have only one wish left. The leprechaun standing there, very amused and enjoying all of this. And Maureen says, where's your pot of gold? And Mr. O'Casey says, may I talk now? Well, yes. And he points over there. He nods to a pot sitting a few yards away. The three girls talk in hushed tones. Bridget and Colleen still hold his arms. And Maureen, finally, they come to him and say, here's our wish. We wish for three pots exactly like that one. She points to the pot he nodded to. Then Casey says, and so you shall have them. Let me arms go and it's done. Sure as me name's Patrick Aloysius Michael Sean O'Casey himself. And Colleen says, you'll run away. O'Casey says, no, I won't. I'll grant your wish and then I'll be gone. Maureen says, okay, let him go. The girls let the leprechaun go. He walks to his pot, picks it up, turns and walks back and hands the girls each a pot just like his. And each one is empty. Here you are, lassies. Three pots exactly like mine. I'm surprised you did not wish for the gold too. But the pots are very nice. And the leprechaun dances away, laughing and singing as the girls stare at their pots. Open mouthed.
That's a great story. I was racking my brain trying to think of how he was going to make the pot of gold exactly the same. And yet I thought it was going to be staked to the ground by magic. Yeah. And he would have some more pots of gold.
This is one of my favorite stories that I wrote it. And this, I wrote this for a Girl Scout troop. I knew the Girl Scout leader, and she asked me if I could come up with a story that the girls could do at this event, and it would be like a little play. She said, not something too long, you know, just a couple minutes, but just something to put them kind of in the mood, I guess. And anyway, so I wrote this and gave it to her. And the girls tried it out at a meeting before they had this event. And they liked it so much. And they had to find, it was a Girl Scout event. So they had to find a boy to be the leprechaun. They insisted. They didn't want one of the girls to kind of dress up like a leprechaun. So anyway, if I had known the answer about that, are there girl leprechauns, we could have fixed it then. But anyway, one of the girls had a brother who was just a year younger than she was. And she said he would look, you know, and he did a good job. I went to the event because I was curious to see how they would do in front of a group of adults. A lot of parents were there and things. Oh man, look at that. Is that the train coming from Dublin?
That's the train, that's right. It's coming through my window here.
Okay, well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Because, that was, you know, I usually don't have anyone give me an idea for a story. I'm always looking for ideas for stories, but, a couple of times someone has like, what do you call that? I was going to say requisition, but that's not it. There are words that I keep forgetting. You know, when somebody says, I want you to make a painting of the tree outside my house. What is that? A commission. Yeah, a commission. Some people commission. Yeah. So anyway, and I've performed that a couple of times, and at different schools, in elementary schools that I've been to, I've had three girls and myself do this as a little play, you know, give them a copy of it and tell them that they have to use the names that are in there. I did that at one with one group, and the girl said, but none of us are named those names. I didn't want to leave it blank and then have to write it in and all that stuff. So pretend you can pick whatever name you want to do. It was funny because the girl who said that was so serious. It was like, gee, Mr. Storyteller, something wrong with you? They're not our name. Anyway, I'm glad you like that.
That's wonderful.
Okay. So, and thanks to Andy Oppa Irwin for opening up the show for us with this wonderful song, Terry Here. One of these days, we're going to have to sing it for him.
Oh, we could do that, yeah, but not today. I would need to practice.
Right. Yeah. Well, okay. So Andy is very kind to let us use that, his recording of his original song. And of course, he sings it, plays the guitar to it. And it's a nice way to begin the show, and it fits perfectly.
Yeah, it's a great opening.
Do you have anything for us?
I do. I have a story for us. I think it's a bit, well, it's probably about the same length as yours was, maybe a little bit longer. So this is the story Luck by Mark Twain. And I have to give you Mark Twain's little one-sentence introduction. He says, "This is not a fancy sketch. I got it from a clergyman who was an instructor at Woolrich 40 years ago and who vouched for its truth." Here's the story. It was at a banquet in London in honor of one of the two or three conspicuously illustrious English military names of this generation. For reasons which will presently appear, I will withhold his real name and titles and call him Lieutenant General Lord Arthur Scoresby, VC, KCB, etc., etc. What a fascination there is in a renowned name. There sat the man in actual flesh, whom I had heard of so many thousands of times since that day, 30 years before, when his name shot suddenly to the zenith from a Crimean battlefield to remain forever celebrated. It was food and drink to me to look and look and look at that demigod, scanning, searching, noting, the quietness, the reserve, the noble gravity of his countenance, the simple honesty that expressed itself all over him, the sweet unconsciousness of his greatness, unconsciousness of the hundreds of admiring eyes fastened upon him, unconsciousness of the deep, loving, sincere worship welling out of the breasts of those people and flowing toward him. The clergyman at my left was an old acquaintance of mine, clergyman now, but had spent the first half of his life in the camp and field and as an instructor in the military school at Woolwich. Just at the moment I've been talking about, a veiled and singular light glimmered in his eyes, and he leaned down and muttered confidentially to me, indicating the hero of the banquet with a gesture, "Privately, he's an absolute fool." This verdict was a great surprise to me. If its subject had been Napoleon, Socrates, or Solomon, my astonishment could not have been greater. Two things I was well aware of, that the Reverend was a man of strict veracity and that his judgment of men was good. Therefore, I knew beyond doubt or question that the world was mistaken about this hero. He was a fool. So I meant to find out at a convenient moment how the Reverend, all solitary and alone, had discovered the secret. Some days later, the opportunity came, and this is what the Reverend told me. 40 years ago, as an instructor in the Woolwich Military Academy, I was present in one of the sections when young Scoresby sat for his preliminary examination. I was touched to the quick with pity. The rest of the class answered uprightly, while he didn't know anything. He was evidently good, sweet, lovable, and guileless. It was exceedingly painful to see him stand there serene as a graven image and deliver himself of answers which were miraculous for their stupidity and ignorance. My compassion was roused in his behalf. I thought, when he comes to be examined again, he will be flung over. It will be simply a harmless act of charity to ease his fall as much as I can. I took him aside and found that he knew a little of the Russian Tsar's history. As he didn't know anything else, I went to work and drilled him like a galley slave on a certain line of stock questions concerning the Tsar, which I knew would be used. On examination day, he went through with flying colors. He went through on that purely superficial cram and got compliments, while others who knew a thousand times more than he got plucked by some lucky accident, one not likely to happen twice in a century. He was asked no question outside the narrow limits of my tutoring. It was stupefying. Well, I stood by him with something of the sentiment a mother feels for a crippled child. He always saved himself by a miracle, apparently. But the thing that would expose and kill him was mathematics. I resolved to give him an easy death, drilling and cramming and drilling, just on the line of questions the examiners were most likely to use, and then launching him on his fate. Try to conceive the result. He took the first prize and a perfect ovation in the way of compliments. sleep. There was no more sleep for me for a week. My conscience tortured me day and night. What I had done purely through charity and only to ease the poor youth's fall. Never had dreamed of any such preposterous result as the thing that had happened. I felt as guilty and miserable as the creator of Frankenstein. Here was a wooden head whom I had put in the way of glittering promotions and prodigious responsibilities. And but one thing could happen. He and his responsibilities would all go to ruin together at the first opportunity. The Crimean War had just broken out. Of course, there had to be a war. We couldn't have peace and give this donkey a chance to die before he is found out. I waited for the earthquake. It came and made me reel when it did. He was fast marched to a captaincy in a marching regiment. Better men grow old and gray in the service before they climb to a sublimity like that. And who could have foreseen that they would put such a load of responsibility on such green and inadequate shoulders? I might just barely have stood it if they'd made him a cornet, the captain. Think of it. I thought my hair would turn white. Consider what I did, who so love repose and inaction. I thought, I am responsible to the country for this. I must go along with him and protect the country against him as far as I can. So I took my poor, small capital, saved up through years of work and grinding economy, went with a sigh and bought a rank in his regiment. And away we went to the field. And there, it was awful. Blunders. He never did anything but blunder. But nobody was in on the secret. Everyone had him focused wrong, misinterpreted his performance each time. They took idiocy for inspirations of genius. Honestly, his mildest blunders were enough to make a man in his right mind cry. They did make me cry, and rage, and rave, too, privately. The thing that kept me always in a sweat of fear was that every fresh blunder increased the luster of his reputation. I kept thinking, he'll get so high when discovery finally comes, the sun will fall out of the sky. He went right along up from grade to grade over the dead bodies of his superiors until at last, in the hottest moment of the battle, down went our colonel. My heart jumped into my mouth. Scoresby was next in rank. Now, said I, we'll all land in hell in 10 minutes, sure. The battle was awful. Allies steadily giving way all over the field. Our regiment occupied a position that was vital. A blunder now must be destruction. At the crucial moment, what does this immortal fool do but detach the regiment from its place, ordering a charge over a neighboring hill where there wasn't a trace of an enemy? There you go, I said to myself. This is the end at last. And away we did go, and were over the shoulder of the hill before the insane movement could be discovered and stopped. What did we find? An entire and unsuspected Russian army in reserve. And what happened? Were we eaten up? That is what would have happened in 99 cases out of 100. But no, Those Russians argued that no single regiment would come rousing around there at such a time. It must be the entire English army, and that the sly Russian game was detected and blocked. So they turned tail, and away they went, pell-mell, over the hill, down into the field in wild confusion, and we after them. Those Russian reserves, they themselves broke the solid Russian center in the field. They tore through, and in no time there was the most tremendous rout you ever saw. The defeat of the Allies was turned into a sweeping and splendid victory. Marshal Canrobert looked on, dizzy with astonishment, admiration, delight. He was sent right off for Scoresby and hugged him, decorated him on the field in the presence of all the armies. Scoresby's blunder that time, merely the mistaking his right hand for his left. That was all. An order had come to him to fall back and support our right. And instead, he fell forward and went over the hill to the left. The name he won that day as a marvelous military genius filled the world with his glory, and that glory will never fade while history books last. He is just as good and sweet and lovable and unpretending as a man can be, but he doesn't know enough to come in when it rains. He is the supremest ass in the universe. And until half an hour ago, nobody knew it but himself and me. He has been pursued day by day, year by year, by a most phenomenal and astonishing luckiness. He has been a shining soldier in all our wars for a generation. He has littered his whole military life with blunders and yet has never committed one that didn't make him a knight or a baronet or a lord or something. Look at his breast. Why, he is just clothed in domestic and foreign decorations. Sir, every one of them is the record of some shouting stupidity, and taken together, they are proof that the very best thing in all this world that can befall a man is to be born lucky. I say again, as I said at the banquet, Scoresby's an absolute fool.
That's good.
I love Mark Twain.
I do too, but I have to say I've never heard that, or I never heard.
When I found it, the annotation said it was one of the least told of Mark Twain's stories and highly underrated.
Right, and that was I know you like to hear the time sometimes. 13 minutes and 30 seconds.
All right, that's good to know.
Good. That was wonderful. I really enjoyed that. And you used a different voice.
Yeah, I wasn't planning on that. It just happened. It's because you talked about voices.
Right. So, very good. So, well, I have another one.
Whoa.
Would you like to hear another one? This is a story about a fisherman. And it's about different kinds of luck.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever told this on the radio, and I don't know if you've ever heard this, but you may have. It has a title called Santiago and the Fish. Santiago was the oldest man in a small fishing village. He had a long career fishing alone, to catch enough to sell at the market and some for his table. His working days were long gone, but he had planned well. He saved enough over the years so that he was comfortable. His favorite time of the week was Saturday evening. The men of the village gathered at the cantina to tell stories of the week's work and adventures on the water. Often A glass of wine was sent to Santiago by one of the fishermen with a request for one of his stories. And that's what happened on this particular evening. So Santiago began. I always started my day very early so that I would have my catch and be able to take a nap on the water, gently rocked by the waves. Not too long, for I wanted to begin rowing back to shore before the tide turned and made the rowing much harder. The warmth of the sun on my face felt good, but I began to feel as if the sun was blinking on and off. I had fallen deeply asleep, and I heard this sound. I heard a voice. I sat up thinking there was another boat near me, but I didn't see anyone. But I heard a voice. "What is that? What is that noise?" I looked over the side, and there was a fish, a large fish, looking up at me and asking, "What is that noise?" I was stunned. I had never seen a talking fish. And then I thought and said, I must have been snoring. And I said, "How can you talk?" And the fish said, "How can you?" Well, that made me laugh. He also seemed to laugh in his own way. He was a beautiful golden color, like the setting sun, and almost as long as the width of my boat. We talked and talked about many things. And finally, I said, "I must go to shore now, for the tide will be changing. And then it will be too late, and I will be taken further out than I would like to be. Perhaps we will meet again." "I have seen your boat before," the fish said, "always near this place, and I am here often." And so the old man went on with the story. He said, "And we did. We met in that place many times. But I no longer go out in my boat, so it's been a long time since I have seen my friend." The cantina was very quiet, and then everyone burst into laughter. It was late, closing time, and Santiago slowly made his way to a small shack down the beach. As he left the cantina, Manuel, a young man who did odd jobs at the village, for he wasn't a fisherman, walked along with Santiago. As they walked, Manuel engaged the old man in conversation. Finally, he asked Santiago if he could use the boat, Santiago's boat, to go out in the morning. "Maybe I could be lucky and see your friend." Santiago said, "Sure, why not? And if you see him, tell him I miss our talks." Next morning, very early, Santiago took the boat and rowed in the direction Santiago had described. When he told the story the night before, for hours, Manuel rowed, paying attention to Santiago's directions. He crisscrossed the area over and over, but finally began to laugh at himself for believing the old man's story. Santiago had sounded so sincere, but that is what a storyteller does, isn't it? He uses his words to get you to, to believe what he's saying is true. I got a little mixed up. Okay, so Manuel was tired and he decided to rest before rowing back to shore. He lay back in the boat. Soon he was dozing. Manuel opened his eyes. He had heard a voice. "Santiago, my old friend, it has been a long time." Manuel sat up slowly and peered over the side of the boat. There was the fish, just as Santiago had described him. Manuel spoke in a calm voice. "I am a friend of Santiago's. He asked me to come and say he missed you seeing you. He no longer works and is very frail. He will be happy that I met you." As he spoke, Manuel had edged close to the side of the boat as carefully as possible. And with lightning-like speed, he thrust his hands on each side of the fish, grasped him, and pulled him into the boat. "What are you doing?" "God, I belong in the water. I need to be in the water." Manuel laughed and said, "You will be in your very own special water in a pen I will make just for you." The fish started to say something, but Manuel was talking excitedly and not listening. "People from many places will come to see you, and they will pay for them. I will become rich." His laughter was almost maniacal as he imagined lines of people coming to the fish pen and giving him money. to see his fish. The fish said to Manuel, I know the secrets of the sea. I will tell you where there is treasure beyond your wildest dreams, if you let me go. And then he said, please splash some water on me. My skin should not be dry. Manuel did as the fish asked. He leaned against the side and began to splash water into the boat. Thank you, said the fish. Some more, please. Manuel kept splashing, and all at once the fish bent his head towards his tail and flexed straight and leapt over the edge of the boat. Manuel was fast, and he reacted and grabbed the fish's body, but Manuel had leaned far out against the side of the boat, and the fish flexed again, and suddenly they were both in the water. Manuel and the fish struggled, but it didn't last long, as Manuel could not keep his grip, and the fish swam a few feet away. Manuel began to plead and tried to bargain with the fish. I would treat you very well and take good care of you. You will become famous. The fish moved further away. And then Manuel noticed the boat was sinking. The struggle had broken the side and the water was flooding in. Manuel knew it would be gone before he could get back to it. And he realized that that would be foolish. He had used a lot of energy and he needed to swim to the shore. As he turned towards the land, he heard the fish saying, you are surrounded by the one thing more precious than any other to men. You may now have all of this water for yourself. The fish slowly moved away, and as Manuel began to swim, he felt the tide had changed, and he was swimming against the tide, and his arms were tired. His muscles ached. His arms were so tired, so tired, so tired.
Wow. I thought I had heard that story when you first started, but I definitely didn't hear it with that ending.
Yeah, that's the way I tell it. And actually, I did. I actually missed one part of Santiago telling a story because there was a thing in there about he met dolphins and also a whale. But the basics, I wanted to make sure I got to finish it. The basics of it were just, and I wrote that about some, actually about fishermen and how some fishermen do real well and others have terrible luck. And I was talking to a group of young men, actually students of mine, and one of them mentioned something about that people always have either great luck in their fish stories or no luck at all, you know? So, and I made a note about that. Maybe there could be a story where there was both kinds of luck, you know, good luck and bad luck. And so Santiago always had good luck and poor Manuel learned a terrible lesson.
Sad, sad, sad.
Yeah, but, you know, but people had to make up their own mind. When I first told that story, I had people said, I'm trying to think, I told it for a group of older people. And so one of the ladies said, well, what happened?
They wanted you to spell it out, huh?
And yeah, and a couple of people looked at her funny, but I purposely said the story, I tell the story just that way because you have to decide for yourself what happens. And you can make up any ending that you want. And, you know, you could continue the story a different way or because I share my stories. And so you could change it if you want. You can make it different at the end, you know, and... anyway, it has always been received pretty well, but always with the look on people's faces, as if they expect a couple more sentences or a final something, you know, a rescue maybe. But I'd like to finish it that way so that they can imagine And in my mind, I like it that way because then they can imagine Manuel's horror and what bad luck he is having. No, so.
Good one.
Yeah. Yeah. And I recently somebody said, you tell personal story, don't you? I said, yes. And I shared some of my stories with a couple of people in my family. But I reminded them that even if a story isn't about me and my family, I often pick someone from my family as the person in the story.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that way it gives me it's a little easier to write a story that way, having a model, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, and I really like doing that. I had someone tell me once, I don't want you writing this stories about my family. Don't write anything about my family. No, I wouldn't. But I did write a story, and I did have two kind of strange characters in it who argued with each other all the time. And I based it on her.
Don't tell us.
Huh?
Don't tell us by name.
Oh, no. No. But, yeah. I did use some relatives because they, and I based the two characters on what I knew about the two men who constantly bickered with each other. So, and it made it easier to write the story because I could use some of their own language, you know. Anyway.
What a day.
What a day. That's right. This is a good show, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And I think we are almost.
We're at 52 minutes.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
Do you have... Yeah. Any words for spring or I think I want to ask our station manager if he's still listening what that backdrop is on his screen.
I can't see it.
He's just come back from the islands and there is what looks like an island.
Oh, really? Wow, that's nice.
It's a sculpture.
What is that, John?
It's
Hey, John.
It's a sculpture.
Yeah.
Entitled "The Immigrant."
Oh. Entitled what?
The Immigrant.
The Immigrant.
Yeah.
He left part of himself behind.
Right.
It's fascinating.
I've seen that before. Wow.
Where is it
it's
located?
It's an Italian sculpture. I'll have to go, you know, I can't remember. I think it's in an American museum right now, but they have different backdrops for it, actually.
All the actual, at the actual location, so you can see, like,
I don't think it's located at this location anymore. I think it was, this is in a, something on the Italian coast, the GNC, where it was standing here in this photograph. But I believe it's not actually there anymore. It's someplace else. But
that's an amazing sculpture. It's titled "The Immigrant."
The Immigrant. Yes.
And it's only half there. Part of the man standing there is in bronze. Is it a bronze statue?
Not sure what the material is. That's a good question.
So
I'm not sure.
You can see from his upper chest and his head.
And it's cool the way the satchel he's carrying, you know, welds the piece to to the feet. Okay. And at the bottom, I believe there's a little platform he's on too, you know, so. But it's interesting how they got it to hold together that way. But
yeah. I wonder when I first saw it, I thought it was one of those backdrops that moves and changes if the person sitting in front of the computer moves. So I thought it was incomplete because of a technical.
No. It's an actual sculpture as is. That you're seeing it actually mounted and standing on a platform on a near the shore. Yeah. So
I love it.
Yeah, and what a message.
Yeah, I mean, you see the person and you don't see them. You don't see all of them, that's for sure.
No, that's right. Yeah.
Great. Okay, well, I'm going to close this out if that's... I'm going to close this out and then John's going to tell us what's up next. This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stasi Okowski.
For the Noontime Enlightened Radio Studio.